Warning, this podcast discusses topics that are known to trigger those suffering from PTSD, depictions of sexual abuse, abuse of a child, and many other forms of trauma, as well as the results of such. Listener discretion is advised.
Misfits Motorsports was born out of a passion for racing and a deep commitment to supporting the veteran community. Transitioning out of the military can be one of life's toughest challenges, and finding a new sense of purpose can feel overwhelming. That's why Misfits Motorsports is dedicated to using the power of motorsports as a platform for meaningful change. At the heart of their mission is the 22-A-Day Initiative, a campaign that brings attention to the heartbreaking reality of veteran suicide. But they're not stopping at awareness. Misfits Motorsports is creating real opportunities for veterans to rebuild their sense of purpose, reconnect with others, and develop new skills that can change lives. And it's about more than just racing. Misfits Motorsports is about bringing people together. Veterans, their families, and supporters to create lasting opportunities that benefit everyone through programs like their Driver Development Program, Co-Driver Program, Pit Crew Program, and Mini Misfits Racing Team. Misfits Motorsports ensures that every role on and off the track is valued and supported. Whether it's mentoring a young racer, preparing vehicles for race day, or cheering each other on at the track, these shared experiences build strong bonds and foster a sense of belonging that extends far beyond the finish line. But the mission doesn't end at the track. Misfits Motorsports is building pathways for veterans to thrive in careers across industries like plumbing, electrical work, construction, sales, social media, and more. They're forging strong partnerships to ensure veterans have the tools, mentorship, and opportunities they need to succeed, not just for themselves, but for their families. Misfits Motorsports isn't just creating jobs. They're building a foundation for growth, support, and a community that veterans and their loved ones can count on. It's about racing with a purpose and driving change for those who've served. If you'd like to get involved or learn more about the amazing work Misfits Motorsports is doing, visit them at MisfitsMotorsportsLLC.com. Together we can make a difference for our nation's heroes. That's Misfits with a Z, MotorsportsLLC.com, or MisfitsPerformance.myshopify.com.
You did it again, Big Toe.
Hey guys, welcome to the second episode of the Ginger Veteran Podcast. I appreciate everybody being here. Before I get started, I just want to say and give everybody the opportunity, if you haven't heard episode one, go back to last week's episode, I'm Nobody and This Is My Story, part one. Listen to that before you listen to this, because if not, one, you're not going to understand what's going on fully, and two, there may be some spoilers in this episode. With that being said, guys, let's get it started. Episode 2, I'm Nobody and This Is My Story, Part 2. So as promised, I want to pick up where we left off last week. Last week, we had just gotten to the point to where I was moving out of the house, out of my mother and stepfather's house because, you know, it was just too stressful of a situation. Things happened, things went down, things got a little crazy. I got a little overindulgent on alcohol, and it was just pretty bad. But at this point, I'm 18 years old. I'm getting ready to move into my early adulthood life. So what I did from this point was, I really had no money. I really had nothing. I had a job, but that was about it. I had a car. So what I did was I moved out of the house and moved into the next best thing. And I just threw all my shit in the back of the car. And I lived in my car in the parking lot at work. I would go shower every night or morning at the community center. So I would go into work at 2 p.m. I would get off at 2 a.m. I would go shower at the community center the next morning. And then I would just sit in the parking lot until it was time to go to work. The crazy thing about that is that one of the guys that I worked with was supplying me. I say supplying me. I was purchasing these. I was spending most of my paycheck on these. But there was a guy there that was supplying me with Xanax. I was also getting Oxycontin to trade to him for Xanax. And, I was just drinking copious amounts of alcohol. I was taking 2 and 3 Xanax pills at a time. When I would get off work, and then, over a period of time, honestly, it was like a couple of weeks, 2 wasn't working, 3 wasn't working. So I moved up to 4, eventually got to the point where I just did so many that I just absolutely blacked out and don't even have any recollection of what happened on that night. I assume that I slept in the car and got up the next morning, 'cause I was in the same parking spot. I was in the same place. So I assumed that, everything was good and hunky-dory and safe, but there's really no way to know. So this went on for about 6 months, living in my car, showering at the community center, just living wild, man. It was crazy. I don't know how I made it, but I did. Not really for the better. I met probably my best friend at the time. I met while I was in this situation, and we really kind of hit it off. Both of us had a lot of issues going on, a lot of trauma, but neither one of us really identified each other's traumas. We just kind of fed off each other's darkness, really. And we were both just out doing drugs and just living, I guess, for the moment, I guess you would say. I guess that's the best way I can describe it. I was popping pills, snorting pills, eating pills. When I was working at this factory and I was working second shift and I was getting all these pills, I was at a point in my life to where I had no care or concern for what happened to me or really for what happened to anybody around me. So what I started doing was, when it wasn't enough for me to just get off work, take these pills and be okay, I would start doing them at work because I craved it. And I didn't crave the buzz from the medicine or from the pill or, whatnot. I didn't crave that. What I craved was separation from reality. And I think that that's a really important thing to talk about when you're talking about addiction. People say that addiction being a disease, you being addicted to a pill is not really not really feasible. And it's not really something that somebody can sit there and say, well, this is a disease. I can see both sides of the argument. I really can. But as somebody who has been there, I think the biggest thing for me is the separation from reality. And that's what I was addicted to. And I think that was my disease, was wanting to be separated from my reality and wanting to be something different. And, these pills gave me this superhuman ability to not be myself and not remember the traumas and stuff that I had gone through and not, be in my reality. It separated me from sleeping in my car. It got to the point where I just didn't remember it. And I'd black out, I'd wake up. And, that was my experience for there for about 6 months. But I, I had gotten to the point to where I would crush them up on the bathroom counter at work, you know, nasty ass bathroom counter. I would crush them up there. I would snort them because just eating them wasn't doing it quick enough for me anymore. And then, like I said, I met this guy who was, you know, my best friend. You know, we weren't really good for each other at the time. But I feel like had we had the opportunity to grow into what I've grown into now, he would have grown as well as he grew older. And I think we both kind of would have ended up sort of in the same position, you know, like, damn, like, look back at what we did. Like, how the fuck are we here? How did we survive this? You know, but at that time, we were both just kind of doing copious amounts of alcohol, copious amounts of drugs. And I mean, you know, people ask me all the time, you know, when I talk about my drug addiction, like, oh, what were you addicted to? And that's the thing. Like I mentioned earlier, I was addicted to the separation from reality. So I was addicted to any kind of pills that I could take. I wasn't addicted to any certain type, any downer or upper or something, you know, like oxycodone or, you know, Oxycontin or Xanax or Lortab or anything like that, hydrocodone. I wasn't addicted to anything certain. I was addicted to that separation from reality. Alcohol just wasn't strong enough. So I would mix alcohol in the pills and I would just get absolutely obliterated just to separate myself from what was going on in my head. I didn't identify that at the time. Obviously now this is after years of therapy and after years of looking back on myself and self-reflection. But you know, it really shines a light on addiction because not everybody who does drugs and gets addicted to them is addicted to them for the same reasons. So I want to share this part of my story because this is a very important part of my story, right? I lived in my car for 6 months. I met a guy who I considered to be my best friend. We ended up living together and being roommates. You know, but I wasn't a great person. He wasn't a great person. We lived in a house that his mom owned that she didn't live in anymore because she was living with his grandmother, taking care of her. So we kind of took advantage of what she had and we just, you know, did what people do who were not in the best of situations, right? We capitalized on her being a mother and her wanting to, you know, make sure that we were taken care of and she was trying to do everything she could to make sure that happened. And, you know, we took advantage of it. And I'm not proud of it. I'm not telling you guys this because I want to brag about it. This is what happened. This is true. And this was just me. This was me at this point in my life. So we were, you know, going every night and using what money we had to buy drugs, buy alcohol. I mean, you open my fridge and it was 30 racks of beer and maybe some sandwich meat, and maybe we had some bread on the counter, maybe we didn't, I don't know. Sometimes we'd have mustard, sometimes we wouldn't, sometimes we'd have cheese, sometimes we wouldn't. It would all depend on if we had enough money to get all of our drugs plus our food. Our drugs always came first. And you know, I just think back to living my life at that time. I was 18, 19, 20 years old. And this, you know, this was that span of lifetime right there. You know, my very, very young, early adult adulthood, it, whatever, you know what I'm trying to say. But looking back on it now, I see instances that, you know, I didn't identify then that something was wrong. I thought that was just who I was. I knew the environment that I grew up in. And honestly, I just thought that this was who I was supposed to be. And I didn't really have any life goals. I didn't have anything that I wanted to achieve because honestly, I, you know, like I said earlier, I had no regard for my life, no regard for anyone else's life. So I didn't think that I would live past 21, 22. I didn't care if I did. I didn't want to see the next day. I didn't want to wake up the next morning. I wanted to live in the moment, do as much as I could to forget my past and move on. Now, During this time period, you know, we were doing so much, and we were one night, you know, we were completely obliterated. This guy that my buddy knew came over, with his girlfriend and another guy, and they were selling us Xanaxes, and I was just so already high out of my mind and drunk that I looked at the bottle that looked like Xanaxes. I was like, all right, cool, we'll buy them. Gave him the money. They left. We crushed the pills up on the counter, snorted them, and then all of a sudden we're just knocked out, right? And then we wake up like 30 minutes later, and we're all like, or we're both like completely sober. Like, what the fuck just happened? What was that? So with kind of a clear head, I was able to look at those pills and realize that they were not Xanax. They were actually like some type of weird, like, fluid pill or something. It was crazy. It was insane. So, you know, being in the position I was in and in the mindset that I was in, not caring about my life, not caring about anybody else's, I told him, I said, let's go get this motherfucker right now, right? So we're all hot and pissed off and bothered, and we actually the next day went to this guy's house, and you know, at this point in time we didn't hurt anyone. We didn't go in there guns blazing or anything like that. We did knock on the door, walked into the house when he opened the door, didn't give him the opportunity to invite us in, but we walked in the house when he opened the door, asked him for our money. He said he didn't have it, so we took some of his things. Look, man, if you know who I am and you are still alive and you listen to this, you hear this by some weird chance, I'm sorry, bro. I'm really sorry. I truly, truly mean that. I was not myself then. I wasn't. And I apologize. What you did to me, fine. I shouldn't have even have been putting myself in that position anyway. Never should have happened. But as time went on, my buddy kind of grew up a little bit faster than I did, and he made plans for his life to develop and grow. And he moved out of state, and he went down and he started welding class, started going to college for it. He was doing great. He had a job. He was doing steady. He didn't drink. He didn't do drugs, nothing. He was on the up and up. He was doing great. And then irony struck, right? And he died in a car accident by a drunk driver, and it was tragic, right? And you know, I'm still in the same mindset of I'm doing drugs all the time, I'm drinking all the time, I'm doing whatever I can to separate myself from reality. This hit me like a ton of bricks, man. It really hurt. Really kind of drove me more toward the drugs and more toward the alcohol and more toward that party life. Surrounding myself with, you know, people who were, I don't want to say bad people, but people who were doing the same things that I was, who were trying to separate from their reality, who were doing all these things and pushing themselves into bad behavior, bad decisions. And, you know, we would just do all the same things together. I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't great. A lot of that time there, I have moments of black that I can't remember, and it's really sad. And it really, you know, at where I'm at right now, it really kind of disgusts me the way I was. So after he passed, I spent a lot of time kind of, you know, just being separated, man, just being high and drinking and just absolutely destroying myself any way I possibly could. You know, and using drugs and alcohol like that is also, you know, now that I've learned and grown and done therapy and stuff, using drugs and alcohol like that is also a form of self-harm. Some people can be addicted to the fact that they know that they're hurting their bodies and hurting themselves. So I'm still doing this, still hanging around the same people. And, you know, before I say this next statement, I want to be perfectly clear. Addiction is one of the hardest things to separate yourself from. It is one of the hardest things. And I will stand here today and support anyone who says that they have gone through addiction, they've gone through treatment, and they've come out on the other side good, and then all of a sudden something sets them back, and they're back on the shit. I promise you what addiction is, the cure for addiction is not cookie cutter. We will never be able to find one cure for addiction that's going to help, okay? What happened for me was I was just, you know, in my head thinking about my future and what I was going to do. And I decided, looking in the mirror one day, you know it sounds cliche, but looking in the mirror one day, I decided, hey man, this isn't you. You really don't want to do this, right? You want to build something for yourself. You want to be able to maybe someday have children. Maybe someday have a big, beautiful house. You've had these dreams before. You want to be able to do this, right? So from that day on, I was able to stop myself from the drugs. I was able to completely separate myself from that life. Did I have the biggest urges to go back? You damn right I did. I wanted so badly to go back. I wanted every day when I was sitting there and I was going through the chills and I was going through the shakes and I was going through the withdrawals and I was just sitting there thinking, man, if I just snort one fucking pill, I'll feel a lot better. I'll be able to be okay, right? I wanted to go back, but inside of me, I wanted to stop it, and I fought, and I was that resilient person that I had never been before. And I was able to put a stop to it. Now, the alcohol was something I could not separate myself from. But what I did do was I took a break from the alcohol. Okay. I slowed down on the alcohol and I was like, I'm going to use this as something that I just do, right? For fun or for the weekend or whatever. And I'm not going to overindulge, right? Well, that never happens. But what did happen was I separated myself from the drugs. I called my grandmother and I said, hey, I really need help. I want to get on my feet. Can I please move in with you? And then while I'm living with you, I will go to school. I'll get a job. I'll clean my life up. I'll clean my act up. So she obviously agreed. I know you guys heard in the last episode, she absolutely adored me, absolutely loved me, and just could not imagine life without this woman, right? So I move in, I start going to a school, not sure if I can say the name of it due to legal reasons, so I'm not going to, but it was a technical school that ripped a lot of people off. So if you figured it out, great. If not, sorry, I can't tell you. So anyway, when I enrolled into this school, I was doing three separate classes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I was doing a math class on Monday, a tech class on Wednesday, a computer lab class on Friday. And I was going to school to be a computer programmer. And 2 weeks after I started school, my left kidney shut down on me. And when my left kidney shut down, went to the doctor, spent some time in the hospital. Then I came out and spent the week on bed rest. Well, that Friday, I get a phone call when I miss class from my academic advisor. And she was like, hey, notice you missed class all week. Just wanted to inform you, you've been dropped from the curriculum. I was like, hold on, what do you mean I've been dropped? I said, I thought I had to miss 3 days consecutively. She said, yes, and you did. I said, no, I didn't, because I did three separate classes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I said, that's only one day in each class. She said, well, the way we work is, it's three consecutive days, it doesn't matter which class. So I got screwed out of that. They dropped me, even though I had a letter from the doctor, I had all this paperwork, they still dropped me out of school, and I still had to pay a shit ton of money. So here I am trying to get myself back together. I've got a job. I'm working at, you know, nothing fancy, nothing sexy. I'm working as a cashier at a grocery store, but I'm working full time. And I'm trying to, you know, get my life together and get my act together. And I'm trying to complete school so I can make something of myself. So this happened, kind of set me back. So I kept my job, but the alcohol definitely increased back to a high level. And then I moved out of my grandmother's house, got a roommate and his girlfriend. We were living together, and you know, it was just a lot of heavy drinking. And then I definitely still stayed away from the drugs. I think, you know, a part of me was like, I don't really want to get back into that. But I was definitely heavily drinking. Excuse me, guys. I'm sorry. I'm just recovering from the flu and just kind of still getting over all this congestion and stuff. But I was drinking very heavily. I mean, I was going into work, probably shouldn't have been driving. I was probably still drunk. Probably, maybe I had some drinks out in the parking lot at work before I went into work. Anyway, that's kind of where I went. So I went kind of full circle, right? I was addicted to drugs, spent span of 2 or 3 years doing that. I was doing a bunch of dumb shit. I'd been shot at, I'd been fighting, I'd cut people with knives. Like, I'd done all kinds of terrible shit. I was a terrible, awful, no good person. So, you know, I'm doing the alcohol. I'm drinking alcohol like nobody's business. I'm drinking it like water, however you want to say it. But I'm still trying to hold down this job, and I'm still doing a good job holding down this job. Again, nothing sexy, just working at a grocery store, you know, grocery retail, not really anything very popular, and not anything that's going to make me any money. And, you know, still not really sure what I was doing with my life. And honestly, still not really giving a shit what happened. I was drinking and driving. I was doing all kinds of dumb shit. Probably shouldn't be here today. But so in this process, I met someone. And when I did that, you know, it kind of made me rethink the alcohol thing. And then for the first time ever, I became a father. And that really made me look at what I was doing. But my first relationship like that was not a good one. It was very toxic. I'm sure that I did things wrong. I know she did things wrong because I saw it firsthand. So I know, very toxic relationship, very heated personalities. When we were together, we just didn't, it was bad. So eventually we didn't work out. We didn't stay together. Still had my daughter. I was still very excited. Still love my daughter. But it had gotten to the point in that relationship that I had started drinking heavily again, and just not, I would go to work second shift. I would come home. I would get drunk. I would pass out. I would wake up when it was time to go to work. And that was kind of my life. And it was terrible. And, you know, I really hate that I spent my life like that, because I missed some time with my daughter. She was very young, but I still missed that time. So after this relationship ended, and, you know, I met my wife now, we had a great relationship, and we really hit it off from the beginning. I mean, it was just amazing. She loved my daughter. She still loves my daughter. She loves her like she's her own. And, you know, it's really, really great. But, you know, we met, and I still had a lot of anger issues, and I still had a lot of things that I did toward her that I shouldn't have. Never hurt her, never laid hands on her. Definitely probably some emotional abuse, and, you know, not intentional, but it happened, right? Luckily, she stuck around with my dumb ass, and, you know, we're still going strong today. But, you know, we went through this time in our lives. She became pregnant. I had my first son. And, you know, we were married, and we're doing our lives together, and I joined the military, right? I finally found where I fit in. And it was the Army. And I finally found what I was good at. And it was the Army. I wasn't good at it in the beginning. I definitely had my struggles. But I grew into my role in the Army, and I grew to love the Army, and I grew to love what I did, and I grew to love helping soldiers. And I think it gave me a sense of purpose that kind of redirected my mental health. Definitely still had issues that were unresolved because I hadn't addressed them. I hadn't done therapy. I hadn't done anything like that. But I think it kind of steered my unconscious brain away from, you know, what it was constantly eating at me, without me really knowing it. Right. So I've got my wife, I've got my kids, I'm happy. We're doing great. Have my second daughter. And you know, life is just going phenomenally. And then one day I get hurt in the military, and I go through the whole process of trying to get better and trying to get it fixed and going and getting MRIs and doing physical therapy and all the treatments that the military wanted to throw at me. And then finally they were like, you know, there's really nothing we can do for you. And the hardest conversation I've ever had in my life was with that doctor. And I asked him, I said, so what's next after this, since you can't treat me anymore? And he said, nothing is next. He said, this is it. And I broke down, man. I broke down crying. I lost it. I lost my shit. I could not control it. I can't even tell you what I was feeling at that moment, man. I was just broken. I was a broken dude. So then I started the med board process. Started getting a little bit of anxiety toward getting out because I didn't know what I was going to do. Man, I got a family of five I need to take care of and feed. And I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. Anyway, the day eventually came. I got out. I had a job lined up. I got out. I took on this job, and you know, for the first year out of the military, I had a decent job. I do have something better now that I really appreciate more, and it more aligns with what I did in the military. So I think I found another great sense of purpose. But my first year out of the military was really the hardest on myself and my family. My wife caught the brunt of most of it. My kids caught, you know, a lot of my emotional roller coaster of ups and downs. Finally told my wife how I was feeling after telling the VA doctor. And when I told the nurse at the VA how I was feeling, how I didn't want to wake up, she asked me if I had a plan to commit suicide. And I said, no, I do not want to commit suicide. I just want to go to bed and never wake up again, right? And she wrote all that down, and the VA doctor didn't acknowledge it. So I was like, all right, this is just it, right? This is just what it is, and nobody really gives a fuck. So I finally, you know, after argument and argument and argument on top of argument with my wife, I finally told her, you know, what I said to the VA doctor and how nothing happened and nothing got fixed. And my wife was my biggest advocate, and she called a caseworker and she got that fixed, and she spoke with the doctor herself, and she told her exactly how to handle me. She was like, look, he's not going to say anything. If you don't say anything, he's not going to say anything. That's not the way he is. It's not the way he works. It's not the way he operates. And she's right. And she was my biggest advocate, and she took care of me so much. So the VA finally diagnosed me with PTSD from childhood trauma and bipolar 2. And, you know, now it's time to seek treatment, right? So the VA sends me to a place, again, I can't mention because of legal reasons. But the VA sends me to this place, and I have a consult with a doctor and go through my whole life story. Everything that I said in episode 1, I told this therapist, and I cried and I broke down. Like I told you guys, I've come so far. I've finally gotten to a place where I can tell this story without crying. But I told this doctor the story through the tears, through the uncontrollable noises that, you know, maybe they could or could not understand what I was saying. And they said, okay, we'll get you scheduled for an appointment. So I go up front, they get me scheduled for an appointment. I come back to that appointment and it's a different doctor. And they tell me that they're ready for my consult. So I do another consult and I tell the same story and I cry the same tears and I make the same noises and uncontrollable movements and go through this whole thing all over again, this whole shitty experience with people who are there to help me. And same thing, right? It was wash, rinse, repeat. We'll get you scheduled for an appointment, go in for that appointment the next week. It's with a different doctor, a different consult. This is my third doctor at the same clinic. And I gave up. I thought that nobody really cares. Nobody's really listening. Nobody wants to just hang around and help me through my stuff and try to take care of me. So I just gave up. Now, my wife would not let me give up. That is an amazing woman right there. After all the shit I put her through, she would not let me give up. So she went and got me community care, which is, you know, what everybody knows is just regular insurance, regular care, regular doctors. Got me community care, and I went to this place that was actually online, and so it was virtual appointments, and I did the first appointment and really kind of felt a little bit of relief after kind of talking with the therapist. But after that first appointment, you know, it just kind of seemed like redundant and repetitive and it didn't really feel like I was getting anything out of it. So again, I gave up. And again, my wife wouldn't let me give up. And, you know, she finally found me another place and it's actually where I go to today. I still am in therapy as we speak and I still plan to be in therapy for, honestly, as long as they'll let me stay in, because for me, and this isn't a, you know, again, this isn't a cookie cutter thing, but for me, what helps me is to be able to talk about it. So I think being in therapy myself is really helping me to talk through everything. You know, there's things in the past that I can talk through and talk it out and, you know, get it off my chest and get it out there. And there's things that I do now that I don't understand still. And I talk about that and she kind of helps me through it. And it's been great. I think this therapist is the best one that I've had. And I think that, you know, we just mesh, we click. And also the med management doctor at this online clinic is really phenomenal. And she really listens and she really, you know, tries to be there and tries to help with whatever I need. I mean, if I tell her, hey, this medicine's not working, cool. If we're on a higher dose than the lowest dose, we're going to slowly wean you off of it. And then we're going to put you on something else like immediately. So you're not spending all this time off this medication. I'm going to switch your appointments from every 6 months to every week until we get this medication lined out and you're good. So this experience has been great. So what I will say is don't give up, right? There's always hope. You know, I know it sounds cliche and it sounds like shit. But I went through three or four clinics. I went through, God, five doctors before I found somebody that I actually clicked with, somebody that I actually meshed with. And I was in the same boat that a lot of people are, man. I was ready to give up. I was done. It just wasn't for me because I felt like it wasn't going to help. I felt like it was dumb. I felt like, man, talking about your feelings, that's a bunch of bullshit, right? One, because of the internal stigma. I'm a man, right? I'm supposed to be tough. I'm not supposed to cry. I'm supposed to go out there and rub some dirt on it and get back up on my high horse and ride off into the sunset, right? All that bullshit that people say that men are supposed to do. Men are, you know, supposed to do this. Why can't I be strong and still let my feelings be shown, right? But there was that internal stigma. There's obviously an external stigma when you go and you talk about men's mental health. And I mean, you know, again, we can sit here and debate it all day. but I know I've been there. I've experienced it. So I know the everything behind it. I've seen it firsthand. I've talked to male therapists who can't, I mean, they hide their emotions on their face. And, you know, we have to remember that when somebody's telling us our problems, that's what they are. They're their problems. They're their issues to get through. And if they're talking to you, I get you may not care, but damn, man, at least fake it until you can find somebody to actually help this person. You want to be the reason that this person gets better. I would hope that you would want to be the reason that this person gets better. But you know, it in this time while I'm trying to find therapy and trying to find something that works, I have 3 kids at home. I have a beautiful wife. I have a good job that pays good money. And on my way to work and on my way back home, I'm just staring off into space. And I'm looking over to the river on my right side on one of the roads that I'm driving down, actually the longest road that I'm driving down. And there's this river that runs parallel to the road. And I'm like, what would happen if I just rolled my car into that river upside down and just forgot how to take my seatbelt off? Those were the kind of thoughts that I was having. I didn't want to commit suicide. I wanted something naturally to happen or some catastrophic event to happen to end my life, because I didn't want to end it, because I knew I had 3 beautiful children at home. I knew I had a wife at home. I knew I had people that were counting on me. So I didn't want to take it myself, but I wanted it to end. And, you know, now I can say that from that portion of everything that I have recovered, it's been a long time since I've had some intrusive thoughts like that. And I'm medicated now. I'm going to therapy. And I'm doing this podcast, right? So this podcast, I want to be able to help other people with mental health, but I also want to be a little selfish. I want to be able to talk to people and talk to people who have struggled and just kind of get this out, right? And get everybody else's message out that wants to share their message. I think this is going to be an amazing thing. And I hope that, you know, somebody sharing their message, if they choose to on this podcast, I hope that it helps them. And, you know, I want to be an advocate for anyone who's struggling, and I want to be able to help you, right? So if you reach out to the Ginger Veteran Podcast on www.thegingerveteranpodcast.com and you request somebody to help you find help, we can do that. We can help you find help. And the thing about finding help is I can tell you right now, if somebody reaches out and asks me to help them find help, I will help you find that help, but I will also stick around and still communicate with you and still have that relationship with you to find out if that help is actually helping, because that's the most important part. Don't just go to a therapist and say, you are paid to fix me, so you're going to fix me whether I like it or not. Don't do that shit. You have to be in control of your own mental health. Your mental health is your responsibility and nobody else's. Remember that. Guys, if you get anything out of this episode, please, please get the fact that your mental health is your responsibility, but there are people out there who can help you figure out how to win the battles, right? You're never going to win the war, man. Things have happened to us in our lives that have really messed us up and have really brought us down and have really changed the way we look at life and changed the way our brain works. But if we can win those battles, if we can win those battles every single day, then that makes us better. I promise you. I know that it does. I'm here doing it. You just have to find the best way to get through your mental health problems, man. You really have to find the best way to get this. You really have to find the best way to work yourself out, to work out everything that you're dealing with, your demons, whatever you want to call it, your mental health battles, whatever you want to call it. You got to find your way. You need help finding that way, right? Some people can do it on their own. Some people have that level of resiliency. I was not that person. I'm doing therapy and therapy works for me. So I'm going to continue doing therapy. I'm doing this podcast. I can tell you right now, this is the second episode and I feel phenomenal. I am looking at everything that I've seen. You know, we had our first listener in Australia. That's amazing. That's mind-blowing. That's crazy. I love it. I think I'm going to eat this up and just enjoy it, and I want to be able to help other people. So check it out, guys. Listen to the podcast every week. Next week, just give you a little preview. We have Sean coming on the story, We have Sean coming on the show, the very first episode. Now I'm regretting not editing these episodes. Check us out next week, January 15th, the very first interview episode. Hey, I said it right. Sean comes on the show, talks a little bit about his internal stigma, his external stigma, what it was like for him being a man and trying to get mental health help, and also delve a little bit into what caused his issues that he is dealing with in his adult life. So it's going to be a great episode. Check it out, January 15th. Same place, anywhere you get your podcasts. I appreciate you guys listening. Look forward to seeing you next week, and keep it up.
You did it again, Big Toe. Bye.